Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. Writer, poet, and philosopher Henry David Thoreau said, "Surely the apple is the noblest of fruits." In this show, we will talk to Travis Charbonneau, Sam Hoffman, Craig Whiteley, and Kathleen Benoit, who I believe agree with Thoreau. Charbonneau and Hoffman make cider at the Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill, while Whiteley and Benoit pick and press apples every year to bring friends and family together. Let's begin by heading down to historic Montana Avenue in Billings to the Last Chance Pub. When I climb the steps into this old brick building that once housed a glass shop, and in the 1900s a Case tractor factory, I am welcomed by the aroma of sweetness and touches of sour. I immediately think of childhood, of sliced apples, of apple pie, and of caramel apples. I walk beyond the open dining room anchored by a glazed brick fireplace, green leathered seated booths, and tables with tropical green metal chairs. The windows in the room looking into the production area show splashes of juice from the almost 10 feet tall press oozing with nectar from apples carried up on the conveyor belt. Several people in rubber suits work quickly and purposefully. We begin with talking with owner and founder of Red Lodge Ales and the Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill, Sam Hoffman. I ask him why he chose Billings for making his spirited apple juice.
You know, I feel like Red Lodge and Billings are kind of joined at the hip. You know, people from Red Lodge go to Billings to do their big box shopping, to buy cars, to fly out on vacation. They have friends and family, and people from Billings love going to Red Lodge. In the summer, they go, it's a little cooler than in Billings. In the winter, they go to ski. There's the mountains, the creek, hiking, you name it. And so it just seemed like a natural place to go to. We sell a lot of beer in Billings, and we have for a long time. And when looking for a space to do the cider mill, there just aren't all that many 18,000 square foot warehouses available in Red Lodge. It's a small town.
So how did Hoffman come to make cider?
Well, I grew up in New England where they have a lot of orchards and cider mills. And for about 10 years, I had partnered with John Ross and Fromberg. We were making cider on kind of a homebrew level. And I felt like there was a real niche to be filled in Montana. There just aren't that many people making cider on a commercial scale. And so it just seemed like a natural outgrowth from the brewery to also offer cider.
And right now, you're ramping up production. You just got a new piece of machinery. Tell the listeners a little bit about that.
Sure. So unlike beer, where you're kind of making the beer every 2 or 3 weeks, cider is very seasonal. You want to press apples when they're ripe. So our pressing season pretty much is October till January, maybe into February, depending on how things go. And we upgraded our press. Basically, we sold every drop that we made last year. We didn't quite have enough, so we wanted to be able to make more. And we also buy apples by the truckload. Unfortunately, you can't get a whole ton of Montana apples. And so we found that if we could press the whole truck the week we get it, there's less waste, less spoilage, and we can make more cider. So this new press I bought from Central Massachusetts for a company that's been making presses for probably 100 years is capable of doing about 350 gallons an hour, and we're doing about 3,000 gallons a week right now.
That's a tremendous amount. I mean, not only do you have to have a machine for this, you have to have the fermentation or the containers and all that.
Correct. Now that we have a nice press, our limiting factor is fermentation space. We did go through some steps with the feds and the state so that we can bring juice or cider down to our tanks in Red Lodge. The brewery has quite a few more tanks, and this is their slow season, so there's some additional capacity that we can utilize down there.
And I understand that you've planted some apples on your property, so are we in the future going to see single vineyard cider?
Well, we got about 300 pounds or 400 pounds from our orchard this year. Red Lodge is a challenge. The trees do okay, the apples grow on the tree, but it's just a short season. They don't really, thus far, have not gotten as ripe as I would like them to. So we'll see how productive an orchard in Red Lodge can be.
Well, don't they go through phases as far as apple growth? Like some years they really produce and they almost like rest the next year, and then the following year they may have large production again?
That is often the case, especially in Montana, where many people that have trees or small orchards don't do a whole lot of pruning or spraying for nutrients. through 4 years, I've stayed on top of the pruning pretty well. We're going to start a program of spraying fertilizers next year. I took some samples and sent them to Cornell, so I know exactly what micronutrients the trees need. So my hope is I can get apples to grow every year. Again, whether they get ripe or not is another question.
However, there are advantages to being in a cold environment.
Apples in a cold environment is there are far fewer pests just because it's so darn cold. So we might have to spray for pests at some point, but thus far we haven't just because they haven't found us.
The pests may not have discovered Sam Hoffman's apples, but we certainly have, in the lease in his cider.
I am definitely thrilled with the reception they've gotten thus far. Again, our biggest problem is that we can't make enough, so hopefully we'll do that. You know, really, my hopes is to be able to offer it in cans and bottles to all of Montana at some point. Right now, it's just Billings and Red Lodge and Cody, Wyoming, for the most part. We sell some kegs around the state to some restaurants. But, yeah, so I'm very thankful for the support I've gotten from everyone in Billings.
It's a good problem to have to not be able to supply your demand.
Yeah, it sure is, yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stella. I really appreciate it.
Recently, Travis Charbonneau was hired to take on the job as the head cider maker at the Last Chance Pub. Before we sit down to talk to him, we head into the production facility where he is pressing apple juice. I am greeted by a man wearing a blue rubber coat and pants with the perfume of apples.
Today we're pressing. So we have a bin dumper that dumps apples onto a table, and then we separate. We call all the bad apples. So all the rotten ones get separated and go to a farmer for his cattle.
So you actually hand pick out the bad apples?
Yes, we do. And then they go through a washer so that they get scrubbed and washed, and then they ride up an elevator and get ground up. And then from there, they fill a hopper, and we pump it through a pomace pump, it's called, and we fill these press sheets, form with these press sheets on it, and then we fold it over, and we just build these giant ground-up apple cakes and then press all of the juice out and then collect the juice in another container.
How many pounds of apples do you process at one time?
Today we're shooting to do about 40,000 pounds.
And how long does that take you to do?
We'll probably be pressing for about 11 hours
or more.
That's a long time. And during the season, you press for like a month and a half?
We press from like mid-September to about February, give or take. So we're going to do about 15 presses total this year.
And you do this once a week?
Just once a week.
Do you use any special kind of apples?
We do. Today is the Jonathan apple, so that's going to go to make our single varietal Jonathan. We've already done our Carmine single varietal.
In making a lot of juice, there's a lot of pulp. So where does it all go?
And that goes to a farmer for his cattle, too. It's the same farmer that takes our cold apples. So he gets around 12,000 pounds of dried out apple pomace for his cattle.
These are lucky cows.
They are. They're very lucky cows.
We are now in the back of the warehouse that is used as the meeting space. There are stacks of empty cans readied for filling and large wood boxes with Hoffman Hill Orchards and Last Chance Cider Mill printed on the sides. Let's learn a little bit about Travis Charbonneau's background. How long have you been with Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill?
This round, about a year and a half. It was a year last May. I moved to Billings November of 2016, and they were just finishing setting up, and I have a very strong brewery background, and so I got a job with them, and then I lived here for 6 months and ran their first press season for them, and then took some time and moved around the country for a little while.
Apples were perhaps birthed into Charbonneau's blood, as he beckons from a place where apples are the largest and most valued fruit crops.
I am from Michigan, so I have run two breweries in Michigan, one in the Lower Peninsula and then one in the Upper Peninsula. And then, like I said, decided to move around and came here and ran this place for a little bit. And then I was in Denver running a brewery called Chaluna in Denver when Sam called and asked if I wanted to come back. And so I came back and I've been here a little over a year and a half now again.
The apple tree has been around for a long time. The apple was celebrated by the Greeks, Romans, Hebrews, and Scandinavians. In the Bible, this was a temptation fruit for our earliest couple. Apples were introduced to North America by colonists in the 17th century, and it is believed William Blaxton planted the first orchard in Boston in 1625. Do note, the only native apples to North America are crab apples, which were called common apples. In Montana, it is believed Chief Plentycoop planted the oldest apple trees in the state near Pryor. He established the trees to help his people transition from a nomadic life to one that was more stationary. In Fromberg, south of Billings, 50 apple trees were planted by John Ross's family. Ross, as mentioned by Sam Hoffman, was his partner in crime in making his first ciders. Charbonneau now shares a little more of the apple's past.
Cider has a strong history. It's been made for thousands of years, and then focal points from England and France. They have big history. And then it was huge when we started colonizing. All of our founding fathers, they basically planted big orchards so that they could all make cider. But cider is basically just apple juice. It's pretty predictable. Like sugar content, it ranges from like about 12% to about 14.5% sugar, high in malic acid.
What about alcohol content?
It typically lands between about 6 to, at the highest, about 7.5. But we just kegged up the Sizer, which is cider fermented with about 300 pounds of local honey this year. So that one ended up being about 10.3%. And that's going to be served throughout the winter. And then we age that in second fill Chardonnay barrels.
This is really becoming almost like winemaking.
Oh, it's totally like winemaking. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and the beer industry's also gone a lot more finesse.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of new styles in the beer world, and it's very competitive. So I guess you better really know how to make good beer if you want to survive.
The Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill focuses on using three different apples for their single varietal offerings. The three apples Charbonneau uses for his cider are Pippin, Jonathan, and Carmine. The Pippin is a classic English apple with a fine grain yellow-white flesh. It's crisp, juicy, and very aromatic with good acid. The Jonathan is a thin-skinned red apple. With a textured flesh, creamy yellow in color, it is crisp and juicy with mild sweetness and tart tang. The Carmine is sweet, crisp, firm, and juicy.
We get to pick different varietals. We have three single varietals that we do right now, the Carmine, the Jonathan, which we just pressed yesterday, and then the Pippin. The Pippin is the one that our founding fathers grew a lot of. That apple has kind of a cool story, a cool history.
What is that cool history?
They grew it because they loved it, and it was the first product we sold back to England without the heavy tax levy after the Revolutionary War. We would gift it to the Queen of England quite often. She loved it, but it kind of lost its war back like in the 50s or so when the grocery stores really started to become chains. They kind of made a rule where you can only have one green apple on the shelf at one time.
So how does Charbonneau decide on what kind of apples he uses?
Personally, we do tend to go for like higher malic acid, so higher acid content, which makes it a little more astringent, but that's what you think of when you bite into an apple. That's what that flavor is that malic acid and that kind of sweetness with the acidity. And then fermentation just changes so much about these things. And so the single varietal Jonathan is one where like I point to, and that's the one that tastes most like an apple. And people are always like, yeah, well, of course it tastes like an apple, but it shouldn't. Wine doesn't taste like grapes. So cider has like some essences of an apple in there. And that's what the malic acid kind of helps. It gives you that idea that it's an apple product. But for the most part, they don't taste like you're biting into an apple. They all have their own individual characteristics.
Well, that's what kind of gives it its coolness. So as far as fermentation, you brought that up. Do you naturally ferment? Do you add yeast, or how does that process take place?
No, we do not naturally ferment. Not at the moment, anyway. There's always talk about doing, they call it like, there's like malolactic fermentations where you use lactic acid and you would convert the malic acid to lactic acid. They do it a lot in the wine world. It's a much more mellow kind of acid. But what we do is we press and we collect all the juice in one big container at the moment. And then we add two types of enzymes that react with the pectins and settle out. And so it clarifies the cider. And then we also sulfite. So we use sodium metabisulfite. That kills the bacteria. And then on Tuesday, I will transfer that to a different tank. And then I will pitch clean yeast. And it will start fermentation.
The roiling and toiling, converting sugar to alcohol, takes about 2 weeks.
So we typically get the apples in on Monday, and then we spend most of the week transferring previously fermented ciders and getting tanks ready, and then we press every Thursday. So if the listeners want to come in, well, they'll see us pressing through the windows and see us in our like blue bibs and all of that.
And where do the apples for Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill come from?
We have a brand called Full Montana that is all just Montana apples, and we had a plethora of Montana apples this year. It's just, we ended up with, I think, close to 3,000 gallons, and we've never had that much. We get probably like 60% of our other ones come from Michigan. This is my home state, and Hood River, Oregon, and Salem, Oregon. We are getting one more truckload from Washington. A lot of people ask about Washington, but Washington grows the grocery store varietals that don't really make that great a cider.
So in your Full Montana cider, I know that the Hoffmans have their own orchard and they started these trees years back. Where do you solicit your farmers for the apples? And I'm sure there's probably a larger variety than the three that you had mentioned.
Well, the Hoffman Orchards needs about another year before it really starts producing. So we do get some from them. We get some from John Ross Orchards out in Fromberg, some from the Flathead Lake area. Actually, people just bring them by too. We pay 25 cents a pound. As long as they're in good shape, we have to go through them, make sure that they're like not rotten and not picked up off the ground. They're actually picked from the tree. It ends up being, I think, close to like 25 different varietals that go into that. That one's kind of an exciting one. You never know. It's not very predictable as to how it's going to turn out. Like this last year's was, I think, my favorite. It was kind of more apple forward, kind of like more towards a Jonathan. This year's is turning out really well too, but it's also much more acidic. It's such a fun game to play, the unexpected, I guess.
How do you decide? I talked about finesse. How do you decide, oh, I'm going to throw it in a Chardonnay barrel or maybe an old whiskey barrel? Or how do you just think about doing that?
That one's pretty easy. That one is, so we do one that right now we call the LCP Junction. It stands for Last Chance Pub. And then we have the train station across the street. So that's what that name stems from. But right now that is our pub cider. So that is kind of more along the English and French style. It's much less in malic acid. It's much less acidic. So it's like a pH of like 3.65, 3.7 instead of 3.3, 3.4. And so with that lower acidity content, we throw it in. That's the one that we put into barrels. And we find that it pulls more flavor from the barrels. All the barrels are unique. All the flavors are unique. The wine ones, the Chardonnay, and this year we actually got a hold of Cab Sauv barrels. That cider, I think, is gone now. That one was just fantastic. I love that one. And the Chardonnay is always a big go-to. And then the bourbon, we bottle both of those. People love the rum one, too.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine a Cabernet Sauvignon barrel. Yeah, just because it has its own distinct, kind of stronger personality.
Yeah, it was really cool. It landed, since it was used, it landed a lot of oak character instead of, like, you got some of the wine characteristics. Like, we were surprised as to, it ended up fading over time, but it added quite a bit of, like, pink color to it from the wine, and we didn't really think it was going to, so it almost was like a super, super light rosé. That one was probably one of my favorite barrel ones that we produced so far, and the Chardonnay this year is quite excellent. It's very on the oaky, slight buttery side.
What has been like the real fun part of making cider here?
So the fun part of like making cider is kind of just been the new challenge. Like I said, I come from brewing industry, and so much of it is kind of the same, where you're like the cleaning and the transferring and what we call cellaring, filling kegs. A lot of that is the same, but understanding the differences in the fermentations of what it takes to cleanly and do cider and do it very well is difficult. And we're doing a fantastic job. I think one of the things we do differently is we're the only place in Montana that we actually press our own juice. We have our own press. I think that just gives us a lot more control over the product that we are getting and that we can actually produce. It's a brutal part of the season, but when you're done, like, you just have such a fulfilling thing to meet people and give tours, and you never meet a person that's in a bad mood when they have a cider in their hand, and it really just kind of like helps. It makes the job pretty fantastic.
Well, it's the rewards. People are enjoying your craft.
Yeah, and they think it's the coolest thing in the world, and that just, it's a really good fulfilling feeling.
Well, we do think it's really cool, and it's cool that you're making it. Thank you so much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
Come back to the second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky as we head to Laurel for an annual home apple pressing. Welcome back to the second part of Flavors Under the Big Sky. We now go to Laurel. The first of winter's wrath have come down on this day. It's gray, it's cold, and Mother Nature is threatening to snow. but in the garage of Craig Whiteley and Kathleen Benoit's home, there are about 30 people huddled inside. There is the perfume of sweet and sour, of apple juice. There is laughter, lots of it, for the annual Whiteley Benoit apple pressing. Craig Whiteley shares how this pressing of apples began.
So 30 years ago, we moved out here and planted these as just little twigs on a drip system, 50 trees. There's Macintosh, Centurion, Transparent, and one other that I'm not remembering right now. And the truth is, I lost the map 30 years ago, so I can't tell you exactly which is which. We do this every year. Bumper crop this year. We have some people that brought bees out before the blossom set. We've never had more apples. The apples are beautiful and crisp. Very few bugs that I've seen.
They look very pristine. They don't even have worm marks or anything.
Yeah, and this full week, every night, we've had a lot of wind. One night, I collected 5-gallon buckets of windfalls. So for the last week, it's been about 3 or 4 5-gallon buckets a night. So sometimes we wait a little bit later, but everything was set for today, so here we go.
Rain. You have about, I would say, what, 30 people here?
30 people, and I only know Joe.
You only know my husband. And so how did you get all these people here?
I don't even know. Some of them came. Yeah, free. I think free stuff was the deal. No, we put a, called Buddies, and then also put an ad in the Flathead V8. I'm in a Flathead Ford guy and a vintage motorcycle guy. So I invited everybody from those clubs.
Well, you have quite a few people that have been here forever. Who are some of the old timers here?
Charlie Yagan is, and he's in his 70s now, has been here from the start.
No, he said he was 66.
Is it, oh, really? 76.
That's what he told me.
He's been here, and that's his press. We've always used his press, and now I have one like it that I got at a garage sale.
Whiteley describes the press he picked up at that garage sale.
It's a screw press, and these are turn of the century. It's with oak slats. It just, with an Acme thread, pushes down on the ground up apples and produces a, and I don't know what the ratio is of apples to ounces, but it's a lot.
Charlie Yagan and his wife Carolyn have been longtime participants of the annual pressing. Yagan just arrived with Peter Yagan V with their own family press to contribute to the festivities. Charlie Yagan shares.
It's kind of a fun old thing, very durable, obviously, but it's from the late 1890s. Gosh, we've used it for that long, virtually every year, and it just keeps working. It's a nice old piece of equipment. Craig planted this wonderful apple orchard in an area that I was really surprised that he even took it upon himself to try to grow apples here, but he did, and it's an incredibly prolific orchard that he's got. He works on it very hard, but we've probably been doing this here for 25 years, something like that, I suppose.
And I think he gives you credit for his buying an apple press also. You know, he planted the trees, but then realized that your family had been pressing apples.
Well, that's true. I think really he was just after the apple press. It didn't have anything to do with anything else but that.
Well, you guys have been friends for a long time.
We have.
Well, you guys grew up in Billings together, right?
We did.
In the west end of Billings, yep.
Yeah, and you used to like ride your bikes together and probably cause havoc. You were probably the little rascals.
No, I was the intellect of this whole group. Always have been. Charlie just has tagged along. We went to school back east together and to school at Missoula together. Done a lot of really intelligent things.
All right, this is good to know.
On the more serious side, Joe Dillard and Ken Kunkel are working away together to process juice. Dillard shares what he is doing.
I'm cutting up the apples so that they fit into the hopper better and get through to the teeth, which are not accepting full apples. So this is making it a little more efficient. We're working at about one apple going through about every 5 seconds. And they're excellent, very firm apples. You can hear them.
after Dealer cuts up the apples, Kunkel is in charge of making juice.
We've really got a nice little system down here of feeding the cut apples into the hopper that chops them up. Then the chopped apple goes into the press. Then we press it down, and that's where the apple juice comes from. And that's what we're here for.
Yellowstone Public Radio's host of Resounds, Corby Skinner, has also been a longtime participant.
Well, I remember when Craig and Kathleen first moved out here and planted those trees. So it took a while before those trees grew to become. But this is an unbelievably productive year. Sometimes the apples get, frozen, hailstorm. This is just a bumper crop this year.
They're pristine. They're absolutely gorgeous.
And a lot of variety. So that's what I'm interested in. I took a lot of apples home because I want to taste the varieties of them. You know, the dull apple, the green apple, the shiny small one. Just to see the nuances between the flavors.
While Corby Skinner enjoys learning about the different varietals of apples, other guests fondly admit that free stuff do incentivize them to join in the festivities. Everyone brings containers for juice and are welcome to take home as many apples as they can pick. Whiteley's wife, Kathleen Minoit, tells why they have been hosting this annual apple pressing.
You know what? It started, I think, as a springboard that we used to do a lot of branding in the area with the Yeagans, and they were not just a job, it was a celebration of people and the lifestyle we have, and we had all these apples many years ago and thought, let's have a party. We don't want to pick all these apples by ourselves. And so we invited everybody we knew. Many people had never been to a pressing, and it just has grown and grown. People get together. It's fun. It's delicious. I mean, it's all aspects of a really good party.
Well, I think obviously it is because it's drizzly, wet, cold out there. I saw 43 degrees on my car thermometer, and people are here.
There must be, I counted it out, and I think over the course of the last couple of hours, we've had 45 people. Amazing. And you know what? It's a throwback to the good old days that maybe a lot of us never experienced, but we read about our grandparents getting together for a barn raising or a roof raising or branding, and a community working together and having a good time.
And on this blustery day in Laurel, everyone was having a good time. Cheers to apples, the noblest of fruits. Many thanks to Craig Whiteley and Kathleen Benoit for letting us join their annual apple pressing. Thanks to Sam Hoffman and Travis Charbonneau of Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill for teaching us about cider making. Theme music for Flavors Under the Big Sky is from Parker Brown. Additional funding has been provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanians. Thanks to you, listeners, for your support. I'm Stella Fong.